name is Andreina.
And my name is Gabriela, and this is Wicks and Candles,
a podcast about two sisters and their obsession with pure film.
Join us on a trip through palaces and manors, balls and tea parties, and a lot of dresses, carriages, and of course, wicks and candles.
This episode is dedicated to the French artist Camille Claudel. So, Gabby, once again, this is a special episode where we watch two movies rather than one.
Yes, Nene. We were a little bit ambitious for this episode, but continuing our series of films which are focused on artists and their art, I think it was a must for us to include the French film from 1988, Camille Claudel, starring Isabelle Adjani and Gérard Depardieu. And we discovered while doing this research for our episode that there was one more movie about this artist called Camille Claudel 1915. And we thought it would be appropriate to watch both, of course. And this is why the idea was born to make this special episode. The thought behind it was to see if by watching two films, we could get a better sense of who this woman and the artist was.
Exactly. We realized that we knew nearly nothing about Camille Claudel, either as a woman or as an artist. And one of the interesting things about the watching the two movies is that we quickly realized that they don't tell the same story, but one seems to be a continuation of the other. The first film, the 1988 film, ends when Camille Claudel is confined to a psychiatric institution. And the second one, which actually stars Juliette Binoche, picks up where the other one ends. So now that we watch both movies, Gabby, do you feel that do we get a good sense of who Camille Claudel was by watching these two movies? Do we get the whole picture of who she was?
Well, Nene, before I answer, we should maybe mention who Camille Claudel was. She was born in December 1864 in France and was a prodigy artist. She was a very gifted child, and her father recognized her talent very young, when she was very young. And he was willing to move from where they lived, somewhere not in Paris, to the big city. They moved to Paris to be able to provide the proper education for Camille. She entered the art school, maybe when she was like, I don't know, around 15. She was very young. And back then, it was already clear that Auguste Rodin was like the person, the go-to person if you wanted to be a sculptor. So her father arranged a mentorship or a trainee position in his workshop for his daughter Camille. And so what we know, the general public knows about Camille Claudel as being Auguste Rodin's pupil for quite some time and then becoming his lover. She was a very prolific artist and has a sad story because she ended up being recluded in a psychiatric institution where she spent the last 30 years of her life and where she died in October 1943. So now going back to your question, do we get the whole picture of this artist? We definitely get a good glimpse of her story. Nevertheless, I would say that none of the films really highlight her legacy and her talent as an artist. They do show her working, especially the 1988 film shows young Camille working a lot, and really you see her hands deep in the materials and modeling her sculptures and so on. But they do it in a very distant way, more like a prop, I would say. They don't really dig into her motivation and how she saw the world and how she conveyed her feelings and her impressions into her art. Yeah, so I think you get a good glimpse of her story in general.
Yeah.
But for me, the focus on neither of both of the films, the focus is definitely not on her as an artist. Now I'm curious to see what your impression was.
Yeah, no, thank you for that, Gabby. The first movie, the 1988 movie, to start, is a very classic period film. And again, just is starring Isabella Gianni in the role of Camille Claudel, and then Gérard Depardieu in the role of Rodin. So basically, you have these two giant figures of French film starring in this movie. And that already makes it like, I think it was, this movie was very well received. Like, this movie was kind of huge when it came out. And I think it's because it's one of those movies that's supposed to tell the story of a national myth or a national figure of, you know, it's this story of Camille Claudel and Rodin. So it's one of those big art culture movies. And I think because of that, it's a very classic kind of linear story from beginning to end. And yeah, I love how you phrase it. I love how you said it gives us a good idea of the story, but not really of the person or the artist. Yeah, because the film does show her from very young, basically all the important milestones or important moments in her life. Like, she's a prodigy, the family moves, she's passionate from the start, she enters Rodin's studio, they grow closer together, then they have their, you know, relationship, and then it goes sour, and so on and on. So in that sense, yeah, we got a good sense of the facts of her life, but I don't know. I found this, the first movie, I found it so, in a way, I kept thinking, my God, this movie feels like from another time. And clearly it is. It's from 1988. But it feels very, like, kind of old style in a way. Like, very theatrical in a way. Like, for some reason, everything was like not natural to me, a lot of it. Like the acting. The acting felt very kind of stiff, but not because people were bad actors, it's because that was kind of like the style of the movie. Yeah, so do we get a good sense of who she was? It's very elusive. But first of all, it's impossible to get a good idea of who a person is just with one movie, obviously. But can I make an assessment of what happened to her, how she ended up in that institution at the end of her life? I don't. It's very, for me, it's very elusive. So yeah, we're going to go into it more and more. But what about the second movie?
The second movie is maybe even more elusive than the first one.
Yeah, yeah.
In the second film, we only get to see a very short passage of her life while she was recluded in this clinic. So we only see her in this environment. And the and there's pretty much nothing else. We know who she is, and they mention her past, and they mention Rodin in one of the scenes where she is talking to a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
The second film is more focused on the emotional state of the woman, Camille, and not, of course, of the artist, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. In fact, so the second movie is actually a very experimental film in a way. Because the first movie, I was saying, is a very classic period film, a very classic French period film. Big budget, big production, like impeccable costumes, like, you know, you exporting culture through this movie, right? The second one is very unusual. And this is a movie from 2013. So it's about 12 years old. Of course, it stars the extraordinary Juliette Binoche. And I've been obsessed with Juliette Binoche for about 30 years. I can't believe this is the first movie with Juliette that we're doing in this podcast. I don't know how that happened. But the second movie is very experimental in the sense that it is a Peter's film because it happens in 1915, but the format of this movie is completely unusual. The movie shows 1 year of her life and the tragedy of Camille Claudel, essentially. Camille Claudel, like Gabby said, was a prodigy, and she became a respected sculptor during her lifetime. She, however, was very much defined by the press and people by her relationship with Rodin. So she fought her entire life to distinguish herself from Rodin and her work. That was like her constant obsession, that people compare her work to him. And they were very closely intertwined, for sure. I guess we'll get into that a little bit later too, how their art intertwines. But she grew, like, Rodin was not an easy man, and they had a romance, like an affair that lasted 10 years, I think. She was much younger than him, and he already had a mistress. He had already had a partner, and he never left this partner. And that was the conflict that made them split in the end, that Camille repeatedly asked Rodin to leave Rose, I think that was her name, to be with her. And he never did. He never did. And she slowly spiraled into what we don't know, severe mental illness, to the point that she was paranoid. She was suffering from paranoia, and she really declined.
So putting those two films together, you have a little bit of antagonist approaches. The one is making it very clear she was ill and she needed. They did the right thing. Her family did the right thing. And the other one is making it look like this was the biggest injustice for a person mm-hmm. who was so talented, especially for such a long time. And it kind of leaves you, the viewer, if you watch both films, uh-huh. to decide who was right, who was wrong. Was this really an injustice, or was this really a clinical necessity to treat mm-hmm. her because she was not capable of living by herself. They if you watch both, I think at the end of the day you are left with a doubt.
That's right. So I guess we can go back to the question that we were trying to answer. Do we get a good sense of who Camille Claudel was by watching these two films? I guess, you know, we learn about her. Like we always say, it's a good beginning.
It's a good beginning, but at the end of the day, even though we watch two films with two different approaches and two separate times of her life, it's still very superficial.
It's very superficial. Yeah, I agree. And clearly, we haven't talked about her art. We have only talked about that terrible thing that defines her life. Like, for a lot of people, it kind of defines who she is. Like, her tragedy comes before her art, in a sense, right? And that is also a tragedy as well, because we are, both of us, we're doing the same thing. We're focusing on this injustice, this real tragedy. And we haven't even said one word about her work.
Nene, which leads me to our second question.
Yeah.
By watching these two films and having like an overview of her life story, how much of the artist do we get, and how much of the myth of Camille Claudel do we get from those two films? Her story is directly connected and very, very closely intertwined with Auguste Rodin's. So this is kind of the thing that we have been hearing about her.
Mm.
She mm-hmm. was Rodin's lover. So how much of the artist and how much of the myth do we, as a viewer, get from watching these two films?
A good question. You know, even though the 1988 movie, it does feel outdated. I was looking for that word earlier and I didn't find it. Thank you for giving me the word. Yeah, it does feel outdated in many ways. I do have to say that despite it all, you do get a sense of the artist. And the story for some periods, like some sections of the movie, there's no Rodin at all in there. Like it really focuses on her. It follows her. So in that sense, we see her work a lot in this movie. I think the movie... Even I was watching a lecture on Camille Claudel, and they mentioned this, that it was very hard to disentangle both their work and their biographies during the period that they were together, because they influence each other. Rodin influenced Camille Claudel influenced Rodin, and you can see, and they were showing like works side by side. And in some works, she was taking, you know, a subject matter, for example, or a narrative, and she was reinterpreting that. Or Rodin was like using a composition that Claudel had done for a famous sculpture later on. And the person who was giving the lecture, he said, they're very closely together. So it could be seen in a, like they were true partners as artists, because she entered the studio and she entered first as an apprentice. Obviously, she was doing feet, hands. I think this was what she was working on. Basically, she started doing feet and hands. And she helped one of Rodin's biggest works, which is The Gates of Hell, I think it's called, which is a door with all kinds of figures in the you know, around it. It's very complex. Like it would have taken a lot of figures, right? A lot of sculptural figures. So it would have taken like numerous people to complete this. So she worked on that. So I have to give props to the first movie, because we do see her work from the very start, from young to old, to the time that she's, you know, getting sick. Lots of scene of her working, getting the mud, getting the stones, talking about it, thinking about it, working with the models, you know, moving people around. I do have a sense of her working. What do you think?
I mean, I have to give you credit for highlighting that we see her really getting dirty. And
yeah.
Working with her hands and doing her actual work. Totally. And there's many scenes where Rodin is observing her work and how she, as mm-hmm. you mentioned, how she works with the models. Nevertheless, as yeah. I said, my impression was still that you are kind of still watching through a window, that you are kind yeah. of distance as a viewer. You're just like, you're seeing something that is factual happening.
Uh-huh.
But it's not that you're really getting behind her motivation and behind her artist flame, you know?
Yeah.
It's a very, very, yeah, very factual portrayal of her as a woman artist. That's my impression.
Yeah.
It's like a recounting. It's just really telling, okay, this is what she did and this is what she worked.
Yeah.
But it's not highlighting.
And we talk about this. We have talked about this in all the movies that we have done. But we have talked about artists, which is, you know, do they actually show us their perspective? Do we understand the inspiration? We understand how the work came to be. And I think it kind of, for me, it's on and off. I feel a little bit more. But I don't want to say this. And I kept thinking about it when I was watching the movies. But unfortunately, this is such a classic. I'm sorry. I apologize. This is such a classic male perspective.
Male gaze.
Yes. Thank you. I forgot about that. This is such a classic male gaze film. It's very much from a male point of view. One of the most telling scenes. And I have a complaint about this movie a little bit. But perhaps it's because it's necessary. One of the first encounters that Rodin and Camille Claudel had as lovers and as artists, so up in both those levels, like the first time that they start to understand that they like each other, there's a scene where they are in his studio at night alone, and they have this stone that it turns, and that's where they put the models, and they will turn this stone around to see the model in from all angles. We do learn a few things, right? And then Rodin turns around, and then when he turns back, Claudel, she had taken like her dress off and she was laying on this stone with her back exposed, her muscles, all of that. So it's a very erotic, it's supposed to be very erotic and very sensual and very, you know, this is an example of how art and personal life combines here, right? That they were breathing, living their art, like they were falling in love and, you know, and putting that into the work itself. But to me, that was like the most classic male gaze scenes of all. I was like, but I cannot put my finger on it too much. It was very much the Rodin's point of view throughout.
Throughout, yes.
Throughout. It's crazy, right? Because the movie's about her, but we feel that is Rodin's point of view. It's weird.
Totally. Anyway. I totally agree. And of course, mentioning again, this film is from 1988. You have the sense throughout the film that she's always looking for his validation. So it's not really, It's not really highlighting her. She was a very determined person from records that are about her. She was a very determined person. She had a very strong personality. And only sometimes you get to see this, also mostly maybe to the end of the film, just on the verge of her becoming really ill. But otherwise, it's like a very patronizing tone.
Yeah.
She was like the girl, she was like a little bit rebellious. Once she was in his atelier working on something and she just got fed up because she was like, okay, I didn't come here to just mold some boring stuff. I want to be an artist. And then she left. So you think, okay, she was like very rebellious, but it's all shown, it's a very patronizing look.
condescending.
Yeah. It's a very condescending tone, and as you said, also giving Rodin a lot of room in the entire story.
I think this movie is worth watching, and it's crazy because I was watching this lecture. It's from the Art Institute of Chicago. And the first thing that they did in the lecture was to mention three works of I guess not fiction, yeah, that had been made, not fiction, but movies that had depicted her life. And essentially they mentioned Camille Claudel, 1988, and then the 1988 movie, and then they mentioned Camille Claudel, 1915, and then they mentioned like an opera that was made as well. So we actually watched two of the three main depictions that are out there in popular culture. So I'm going to be a little generous with the movie because I think we can further separate. I think we can further nuance. I very much appreciated all the scenes where she's working. I don't know. I don't like how they acted. It seems so, I don't know, like over the top. It didn't feel natural, but I guess that's just style, right? It felt like it never felt like she was enjoying her work. It always felt like she was mad when she was like blah, slapping the mud and blah, blah, like very, it was very, all very brusque. No, what's the word? In Spanish, it would be brusco, like rude. It was like tough. It was never a pleasant activity. It was, yeah, the way they moved the models was very like, very rough. It was strange. I think they were trying to show how physical this art is.
Definitely.
I think they were trying to show the physicality that this is dirt, like very hard work. Like you have huge marble chunks and you're working with clay and it's heavy, dirty. So I think maybe they were trying to emphasize that, but I want to further nuance is that in those scenes, even though you say that it looks like it's patronizing, I think it succeeds in showing how she did the work. But where the most male gaze-y after the movie is the whole romance. Oh God, it put me off so much. It's supposed to be beautiful. It's supposed to be sensual. It's supposed to be romantic. You know, when these two brilliant minds meet body and soul. It's supposed to, you know, you are supposed to feel like, oh my God, yeah. But no, I did not. It was gross to me. It was like, this is too, no. This is too, like, you can feel it. And it's hard to explain. And maybe young people will see it and they can explain it. Like, there's this scene where Camille was very young and she was still in her family house and with her brother, parents, like in the countryside. And Rodin and his partner visit. And they were slowly becoming lovers. They were like just becoming lovers. And there's this one scene where the family is outside eating lunch and stuff. And these two are like behind a curtain just kissing passionately. And I think they, you know, the director, this is supposed to be quite like a sexy scene. But it was not for me. It was terrible. Anyway, why don't we go to the next question? We were wondering too, and I think we're getting closer to what we really want to talk about, which is, you know, female artists. What happens to female artists? Like, this is a topic that is of great interest to us, but do you think that this film contributes to elevate Camille Claudel's legacy as an artist? Like, for example, we're talking about in relation to how so many women artists have been erased from history, essentially.
When we talk about the 1988 film, which is the one portraying at least how she worked and that she worked for a fact, then of course we have to give that film the credit of at least portraying her as the artist, at least how she worked and that she worked. Whether this really elevates her art, due to the fact that the film ends on this very sad note of her being brought to the clinic, the last third of the film, maybe the last fourth of the film, is very, very depressing because she is shown in her apartment, which was a very, very small place, and she let it fall into decay, and it was very dirty. Cluttered, and there was no order in her place, and it was very dark, and so on, it doesn't really, the last impression you have is not of something that is being elevated. The last of her art is how she, the apartment gets flooded at some point, and you see her pieces floating in a very muddy, dirty water. So you see her working throughout, but the last impression, the last images you have from this film is not that, oh, wow, her art will live on and so on.
Yeah.
This episode of her life overshadows everything she did before.
Because yeah.
Paranoia, she kind of, she fell herself into despair, and she didn't have control of her life, and she kind of destroyed with the feet what she had done with her hand, kind of.
Yeah.
So, yeah. As I said, partially as if they had tried.
Yeah.
But again, this condescending tone prevails, in my opinion. So it's not really elevating her art. It's not really something that makes you go like, oh my gosh, I was so moved, and
I will keep
this image of her, of that one sculpture. This was this.
Yeah.
You have a clear image of one of her works that makes you go, sparks your curiosity and makes you go somewhere and start researching on her work. So to answer the question, this film tries but does not achieve it. The second film, Camille Claudel, 1915, since it is completely deprived of her art, then of course the answer is also no. This film does not elevate her art and her legacy.
Yeah.
And if I may add something, Nene, okay. as a woman artist, because this is a very, very important part of the entire discussion, as a woman artist, it does not. It does not elevate her art. Again, I had the impression that it was a very condescending approach. And they gave Rodin too much room in the entire storytelling. As I said, he is portrayed as her benefactor, her supporter, which might have been to some extent. I mean, of course, we don't know. We were not there. And there are some records of the story, but we also have to give her the room of the doubt, because she felt that he was taking advantage of, of her talent, of her work, up to a certain point. So
yeah.
I think it's also not really making her justice as a female artist.
They still I see.
Too much of his role as a dominant male celebrity artist of the time.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think there's a lot of there's a lot of telling and not so much showing. Even though they do show a lot, you see it is because they say she's a genius. It's just people saying the thing, right? But we don't get the sense. We don't feel it. We don't feel it through the work. That's the challenge usually for these type of movies. We have mentioned that a few times. Yeah. So it's too much. I think the core issue is because it's the love story takes a big part of the movie. It's like a big focus of the film. And it's tricky because, as we learned, it is intertwined with their work. Like, it does. But the focus is too big on it.
I think so, too.
Yeah. So the last thing that we want to talk about, and is obviously connected to this, to the erasure of women in our history, and what does that mean? I found the second movie so interesting, even though it was painful to watch. It was agonizing to watch. Still, if you are interested in Peter film, and if you're interested in Camille Claudel, and if you love Juliette Binoche, this is a worthy movie. This is a lot of close-ups of Juliette Binoche's face. And if you know Juliette Binoche, you know that that face deserves all the close-ups, and actually you're going to be moved moved. The movie is her face, essentially. And to me, who have been in love with Juliet most of my life, that was beautiful. But what made it so interesting for me is, like, is this movie really smart? Because what does it mean to have a film about an artist without ever showing their art? Because in this movie, nothing. There's nothing. Not one picture. So I think maybe it's also a comment. Maybe it's also a comment on how art history erased female artists to the point that they need to be rediscovered every once in a while. What do you think about that?
Nelly, this comment is bringing me to somehow a conclusion, you know?
Okay.
When we say the first film focused on the love story and the second film focused on the mental illness, I think we have our answer. None of them excel and highlight her as an artist and as a female artist. And this might be the entire injustice to her story. That so far in this two of the three main documentations of her story, two-thirds are not focusing on her art. So I absolutely agree with you. This is not doing her any favor for her as a female artist. This is not in her favor.
Yeah.
None of those.
Because the second movie, even though it's brilliantly acted, actually it's a beautiful film. In fact, it's very compelling. It is just painful.
It's just very
because painful. Of that absence. I often think about this topic. This is a topic that is really an important topic for me, which is the figure of the artist in popular imagination. How do we see the artist and how is the artist depicted throughout history and how is the artist depicted in popular culture, movies, books, right? That has evolved through time. And one of the things I think about a lot is what happens when artists cannot create. That is something I feel very kind of deeply, that what happens if you have a vocation as an artist that you cannot fulfill? And we talk about this in the first episode of the season when we talk about Hilma. And it was painful for us to imagine that you have, you want to practice, you want to paint, you want to sculpt, but you can't. And to me personally, that's an extremely painful thing. If I couldn't write, for example, I feel it's almost like dying. It's almost like not having air, no oxygen. So it's very cruel to make this movie about this. Why they pick this? I mean, I guess if the point was to make you feel the absence of oxygen in a person's life, they succeeded 100%. What it does to an artist to not create, to slowly die. This movie could be described as how a soul slowly dies. Visually, it is tough.
It is very tough.
But
it is very tough.
I was like, why? Why do this movie okay? I think, do you have to make the point again? Like, reading it in a book is enough to be enraged. Like, reading about it, knowing about it is enough to make you cry. It's enough to kind of make you like be very upset. Like, when I learned this, I was extremely upset for days. Because I didn't know about Camille Claudel, obviously. And then I was like, well, she's an artist, and I knew she was Rodin's partner, lover for a while. I had no idea of how her life had ended. And when I did, it was absolutely devastating.
It is devastating.
And here she... Yeah. So, I'm getting a little angry because what is the point of making this movie? Why are you showing her art?
Exactly. So I think
you're silencing her again. You're erasing her art again.
Exactly. So I think we can agree on the fact that we still need to get a glimpse of the artist and of the woman she was. We will still need a new take on her legacy, focus on her art. What was her motivation? What was the innovation she brought within the art? The achievements of Camille Claudel, put in the context of the time she lived, are absolutely in perspectives. In the, of course,
no,
not
we don't.
In the film, but also not in the first film. She was one of the few women artists that really were successful at the time. And maybe one of the most impressive things was among the sculptures, because there were nearly no women sculptures in the scene. There were very few.
Yeah.
It is until today, and it was, of course, back then, a very difficult art branch. Take a lot of time.
Sculpture, yeah.
Bring one work to end, you have to work for quite some time. In the time you make a sculpture, a painter can paint three paintings, you know? And still, she managed to force her way through a very tough, male-dominated scene. And we don't see any of this. The proportion and the dimension and the impact of her work and of her legacy is nowhere to be seen. Put, as I said, put in the context of women artists in that time. So,
oh my God, yeah,
we'll need a third take.
We need a third take. You are so right, Gabby. And I'm going to add a couple more things because, of course, we are getting excited and we're going a little bit long. But that lecture, which will, of course, give the link in the show notes, is very worth watching. It's brand new. It's from last year, 2024. I want to quote a couple things from this lecture. In reference to Camille Claudel being a sculptor, it was nearly male-dominated branch of art, like artistic branch. And what the lecturer said, her ambition in that area was inherently transgressive because it was considered a male art. Like, how can you, because of the prejudice, right? That you need a strength. It's very heavy. It's dirty. It requires a lot of force, and etc. And another comment was really interesting in this lecture. Another point that they were trying to explain is that when comparing Rodin's work and Camille's work, I think we also get another hint about what's happening here and how women get erased in our history and as intellectuals, etc. Rodin and Claudel made works showing each other. Camille Claudel did a bust of Rodin that was so extraordinary that it became his de facto official, well, not de facto, it became like his official portrait. He would present it everywhere. That's the most famous. If you Google that, a portrait of Rodin, you will find the one that she did. Extraordinary. And it's him. It's Rodin. He also depicted her in his sculptures. But she was never depicted as herself. She was always an allegory to a myth, some goddess, some concept. A very famous sculpture that he did of her is called, I think it's called Thought. And it's crazy. She did this extraordinary bust of Rodin. Expressive. It is magnificent. You should definitely look for it. Or maybe we can put a link to it. And the one that they were compared to was the one that he did of her called Thought. And it consists of this. It's a block of marble. And at the top of the marble, a head is emerging. And it's Camille Claudel's head. So it's beautiful. Like the face, is the likeness is wonderful. It's wonderful. But it's not a depiction of Camille Claudel as a sculpture or as a woman. She's depicted as a concept. And is depicted, she's swallowed by this block of marble. It is an extraordinary contrast that I'm trying to make here, that in her work, she named him, name, a face. This is his face. This is his name. This is this sculpture. This is his beard. This is how his eyes look. But for her, he didn't have, like, he never said, this is Camille.
There
this is a portrait of Camille at work, for example.
There you go.
And I think that's our conclusion.
I think that's our conclusion, especially knowing that the breaks, the contribution she made to sculpture and even to him, because by the time they met mm-hmm. and she started working with him, first for him and then with him, was that he was actually a little bit lost. He had lost a little bit of his touch and he was looking for inspiration mm-hmm. and so on. So his works at the moment they met were not the best. And she mm-hmm. kind of brought him back to life and he found his path again through Camille. So I think the contribution she made to the world mm-hmm. of sculpture it was pretty breakthrough. She brought so much humanity yeah. and so much, as you mentioned, so much expression into yeah. into sculpture, which is a very difficult medium to work with.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. She was also innovative.
She was very innovative.
Her compositions are considered to be very innovative, especially one of her most, if not the most famous work that she did, which is called The Waltz. Has a very unusual composition in a diagonal. So I guess we'll put that as well. So in the show notes, she was an innovator. She broke the mold, actually, to use that expression. yeah, and these two movies, again, that was not the focus.
Unfortunately.
That was not the focus. Yeah, unfortunately. Anyway, Gabby, this discussion has been fascinating, very enriching, and I think, as always, like a beginning of learning about Camille Claudel, for us anyway. So anything else that we'd like to add?
I think we can go directly into our writing this time.
Oh, the writing? Okay, sure. Okay, so how many wicks and candles do you give Camille Claudel and Camille Claudel 1915?
This is a tricky question, even though it's just one question, but it is a tricky question
yeah.
because we have already mentioned a few critical points for both films. So I have to detach my expectation to what I really saw. You know? Mm-hmm. Coming to Camille Claudel from 1988, if I evaluate it from the period film genre perspective, of course, this movie excels in many points. It ticks a lot of mm-hmm. boxes. Mm-hmm. Production was impeccable. Costume design was impeccable. I mean, the outfits were beautiful. They were absolutely on point. I think my favorite scene was when they meet at Camille Claudel's family house in the summer in the countryside, and they have lunch. And Rodin visits them. Mm. And they have lunch outside on the terrace. It was so beautiful. This is, for me, like the epitome of a period film.
That's right.
A lot of linen, tablecloths. A lot of porcelain and glasses, beautiful dresses, a lot of flowers and stuff. So from that point of view, I think this film, of course, is really beautiful. And this is where I say, okay, maybe I have to detach my expectation from that film, because, of course, I would have expected, if the film is really lengthy, it's very, very long, if they take so much time and effort to tell her story, they deprived, they focus too much on the love story and they deprived Camille Claudel to really shine with her art. This may be my expectation. So, of course, I have to deduct some points from that.
Yeah.
Also, the entire tone of being a little bit too much on the male gaze type of approach. Okay, we're looking at a movie from 1988 and so on. Taking everything in consideration, I would still say, trying as objectively as I can, I would give it an 8.
Whoa! An 8.
As I said, as a period film, it ticks a lot of boxes. Camille Claudel 1915, from a cinematic point of view, also ticks a lot of boxes. It is very experimental. It is moving you. It is causing an effect. It is shaking you to the core.
Yeah.
The acting of Juliette Binoche is superb.
Oh,
it's superb.
She's superb.
It's, as you mentioned, it's pretty much close-ups. And how she expresses so much with her eyes. You see the sharpness of her intelligence in her face.
Mm-hmm.
And, you feel this, how trapped, how really trapped her as a human and as a, like her spirit was in this place. So it is excruciating. You get extremely close to what she felt. So I think her acting is extraordinary. As I said, cinematography, I think they did it very well. I think technically it was very good. So if I just take that film as a film without taking in consideration that they really tell the story properly, I would even give it a 9.
Whoa.
Because of the impact it leaves you. As I said, because it shakes you to the core. You leave the cinema giving it a lot of thought.
Yeah.
And, you know, enraged, even if you are enraged, because you say, okay, this was a film about an artist, but I didn't see any art, you know? It has already achieved a certain purpose.
Yeah. Okay, well, Gabby, I am surprised. I am very surprised by your ratings. I'm gonna go, the thing is, like, ratings are so depending on what are you actually rating. I think I'm gonna rate them on pleasure.
Very well, it's a fair point.
Camille Claudel from 1988 gave me little pleasure. It was dark. The acting was so strange to me, like this rush kind of, like, just one example, like, we were always saying, we want to see the work going through the artist, right? Like, we want to see, her perspective, her mind working. We want to see her mind at work and how that is, you know, finally expressed in her sculpture. And she seemed to be mad all the time. Like, she was like, there was no, it was just very external. There was nothing interior. The acting was very external. Like, the acting is, I guess, the style. It's a style of acting. Maybe that is not in vogue anymore. But it was very, it was about externalizing and not so much about showing internal, internalizing. And crazily, Juliette Binoche is all about the interior life. Like, it's the opposite. It was all about the stillness and you see in her face. However, I had little pleasure watching this movie. I will give it a 7. For the reason that she did, Isabella Gianni gave an amazing, even though it was weird, like, stilted acting, I still think she did a beautiful job. She's compelling anyway. And then for the second movie, Juliette is forever my Juliette. Did I feel pleasure at times? Only aesthetic pleasure. The only aesthetic pleasure in seeing Juliette acting. but pleasure was little, almost non-existent. I did have like intellectual pleasure in the sense that I was thinking about the absence. You know, this is how you show, this is how you represent the absence of the art, like how it feels to not be able to create. So I had that intellectual pleasure of going into that, wow, that's, I haven't seen this before. But it wasn't as pleasurable. So I also going to give you, maybe I'm going to give it an 8. It's just because Juliette Binoche, she's, you know, this cliche word that they use, luminous. This is a very cliche word to express something that is kind of sublime, like a sublime face that is luminous. Juliette is, I mean, I think, Gabby, to conclude, I hope that the fact that we watch this movie, it's just so that we bring more Juliette Binoche movies to our podcast.
Okay.
What do you think? What do you say about
that? Two conclusions. The films do not do justice to Camille Claudel. We need a third take on her life, showing her art. And the second conclusion, we need more Juliette Binoche in Wigs and Candles.
I will say that we need at least one Juliette Binoche per season. To make up for the other
four seasons
that we haven't had Juliette.
We can make an entire Juliette Binoche season.
oh, please. Let's go.
That's a plan.
Okay. Well, Gabby, this was very interesting. Thank you so much. It was a little bit of homework doing this movie, watching these movies, but as always, I had the best time talking to you about them.
Thank you, Nene. It was my pleasure. And also, of course, not only are we talking about films we love, but also about art, which is our second passion. So this was
exactly
exquisite.
Exactly. I think this right fits right in into our series about artists. And yeah, we always end up a little mad. But that's how it goes. Anyway, thank you, Gabby. And thank you, everybody, for listening. See you next time.
Thank you. Stay tuned.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wigs and Candles is written, hosted, and produced by Andreina Romero and Gabriela Norken Romero. The image design is by Pamela Rowling. The podcast theme music is the Concerto for Two Violins in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach.
Wigs and Candles is on Instagram and TikTok at Wigs and Candles. Make sure to follow us and also subscribe to Wigs and Candles on your favorite podcast platform.